This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is part two of this week's episode. The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, so at this point in the book, Danica and Bryce are walking to the Comitium, where Danica has to go to a meeting. They happen to stop at the Heart Gate, one of the seven gates in the city. Just have to stress the seven. Danica wants to make a wish instead of going to the meeting that she's supposed to be at. First off, Heart Gate, like the heart chakra. Keep in mind that this is also the gate that Bryce uses at the end of the book, the Heart Gate. Just put a pin in that. We'll come back to it at the end of the book.
Yeah.
Let's talk instead about the fact that Danica just outright lied to Ember, and so when Bryce asks Danica what she wants to wish for, we can assume Danica's lying, because Danica's always lying.
Yeah.
Danica brandishes lies like a weapon at all times, making it impossible to really get close to her. Bryce doesn't quite see that yet. She thinks Danica is a selective liar, but soon she will see Danica is a habitual liar.
So Danica, her wish is that Ethan wins.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't think that that's a lie. I think that that was her having a wistful moment of her knowing that she's going to die. And she wanted one normal thing to happen.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
See, for me, I always assumed that what she was really wishing for was for Bryce's safety. And I have no reason other than I believe Danica is always lying.
Yeah, no, Danica is a lying
Lying liar?
Lying liar. But I definitely, you know, all of this reads so depressing to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it reads so, like, I want to make memories with my friend because who knows how many days we have left. And it's like, let's make a wish type thing. And it's just all very, it's all very depressing.
Yeah, it is depressing.
Light it up.
Don't say that.
Okay.
Back to the lying stuff. Bryce is soon going to see how truth and lies have been weaponized against her. And I bring this up because Bryce is going to have very violent reactions to lying throughout this book. And we have to know now when those lies are happening so that we feel how Bryce feels, which is devastated because basically her entire friendship has come across as a lie.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about like where they're at mentally, Bryce is just going around living her life being like, this is just a normal day. Like, yeah. You know, in her mind, it's just a fun, mm-hmm. cool day. It's a Thursday. That's literally how it starts off. Yeah. It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
And in Danica's mind, it's who knows how many days I have left.
Yeah, which is really depressing.
Yeah. And it's really sad to think that your friend's going through that alone. You can always tell me if you've stolen something.
And I'm going
to
die.
And it might lead to your death. I want you to know now that our friendship can last.
Okay.
And I'll help you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Because you know I won't get a tattoo.
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to have to find other ways. So I'm going to come back with the queer theory. Some tourist boys try to flirt with Danica and she blows them off. Quote, Danica said without looking at them, unimpressed and uninterested. Okay, I'm just saying that these are like those moments where I'm like, huh? Huh? And we know Danica likes men. We know all this stuff. But like, you know, this is literary interpretation. Let me have it. I also love Bryce's confidence when they look her way. Quote, the awe on their face turned to blatant interest. Bryce snorted, keep dreaming. She's like, yeah, no, they're checking me out. And I know they're checking me out. Like, I just love it. I love her confidence.
She is so confident.
Yeah.
What would that be like?
I don't know, but I have a theory that by the end of this season, we're going to be a little bit more confident. With our Bryce-ism.
I love that for us. I love that for our listeners because we want you to be more confident too.
Yeah. Stick around by the end of the episode and we're going to do this like new fun thing. So we all channel Bryce.
So I have a question for you, Jack.
Oh my God. Okay.
Danica hands over a drop of magic when she makes her wish. So now the gate has a drop of her magic, just like she has a drop of magic from anyone who's ever made a wish or mm-hmm. used it to communicate before.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that drop of magic that allows Danica to be present at the end of the novel? Does the drop somehow basically make like a little pin on the map so that her soul can make it there later when Bryce needs her? Food for thought.
I did not read your question correctly. What? Wow. Like a little tracking device, like a little air tag.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
it feels like a purposeful thing.
It feels like a purposeful thing. That might have been the last time her magic was used.
It'd be great if that comes back in book three.
It would be.
At the time of this recording, book three has not come out.
Oh, yeah. We should have said that at the top.
Trust me, you'll know. You'll know.
I want to note that Bryce is praying to every god in this chapter. Like SJM is on a mission to name them all. And it's kind of overwhelming. So far, we've got Luna, Solas, Kithona, Ogenis. And I think the only one she hasn't mentioned yet is Urd. But there are five.
These are all Norse gods, or?
I don't remember. I looked up the names of these gods. Luna is the moon. Solas is the sun. Kithona is the underworld. Ogenis is the sea. And I think Urd is earth.
Death? Oh.
Anyway, so just letting you know.
Okay.
And
she's going through them.
Talk about world building.
She is, right?
The other thing that SJM is doing in addition to world building that you don't know right now is she's setting us up to be devastated. And what do I mean by that? She is laying it on thick when it comes to Bryce and Danica's relationship. Quote, from the moment Bryce walked into her dorm room freshman year, they'd done everything together, they being Bryce and Danica. Just the two of them, as it always would be. They even planned to make the drop together, to freeze into immortality at the same breath, with members of the Pack of Devils anchoring them. And later, on the very same page, quote, Bryce had rarely thought about where she'd fall on that spectrum, whether her half-fey heritage would grant her 100 years or 1,000. It didn't matter, so long as Danica was there for all of it.
You just, like, don't know how thick she's laying it on.
So thick. Because, and we believe Danica will live forever because Bryce believes it.
Also, girl best friends are the most magical kind of best friends.
They are.
Like, sorry to the 2% of boys who listen. But, like, there's something, like, girl best friends are just, it's magical.
It is magical. And this is where I argue that Danica is Bryce's first love and soulmate.
Yeah.
Like, the mourning process Bryce goes through is so intense. It's not normal for friends.
I don't know. Close your eyes. Now imagine me gone.
Please don't make me do that. Like I said earlier, by Danica dying first, SJM perpetuates her pattern, albeit in an unexpected way, of the first love not being OTP or the mate.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's going to be Hunt.
Yep.
Which, by the way, listener, SJM has confirmed Hunt and Bryce really are mates, and we're going to spend this novel and probably the next proving that to you.
Until book three comes out, we're like, ah, shit. Yeah. No, she does say that is like they are.
It's a recent mates. Interview.
Yeah, in a recent interview, recent being a couple months ago, but she says they are mates. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, no, I think that you make a really great point that, you know, people point to Connor as like, no, that was the first love. And like, you know, it doesn't have to be romantic love.
Yeah.
You know, like there's it. Yeah. I did try to imagine just now. You go in and I was like, no. I don't like it. I don't like it. Yeah. It's a, it is. I think you made it. You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. Speaking of making the drop, Danica and Bryce plan to make the drop at 27, what they consider the ideal age. From Quora.com, the number 27 is considered significant in numerology, often being associated with spiritual insights, humanitarianism, and a harmonious balance between the material and spiritual realms. Or maybe human and fae, mortal and immortal. The biblical meaning of the angel number 27 is rooted in faith and spiritual enlightenment. Like immortality.
Mm-hmm.
Just when we got used to looking up names, now we got to look up numbers too. SJM was really pulling out all the stops.
No.
And also, like, I have to keep going back to the angel numbers because there are literal angels in this book.
Yeah. Who decided the angel numbers?
One of the Christian groups. I don't know which one.
And was it recent or was it like?
I feel like it. I mean, I don't know.
I just want to know.
I mean, the first time I ever heard of angel numbers was actually your mother.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Before that, I didn't know they existed.
I've heard of angel numbers before, but I'm also like, but who knows? So for me, certain numbers that reoccur, like my dad died on the 16th. And I've noticed that any significant thing happens is on the 16th. Like, I think we graduated from college on the 16th or close to it. And then same thing again for my master's. And then the addresses, like different addresses or different, but like there's always been like key moments where 16 reappears. So that's like my dad number, the angel number, my angel number. So that's how I associate them. But I do know that, like you're saying, there are numbers linked with this. I'm going to have to wait until someone emails us and tells me because I'm not going to Google it.
Why would I do that?
No. I very much appreciate this waiting until they're 27 thing because frontal lobe's done. You know how I feel about under 25. Your brain's not done yet.
Yep.
I mean, they're 23
mm-hmm.
and then the jump is like, what, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And she's 25.
She is.
She's a grown adult. She's a grown adult.
First time SJM has given us a grown woman.
Slow clap. Oh my God. I will feel no. And then this is the one time she denies us the sex scenes. Yeah. What a cruel woman. What a cruel, cruel woman. But, and then also just the fact that like, they're like, oh, I need to wait. So we need to do it before we get saggy tits. And I'm like, all right, well, if Bryce is as stacked as I think she is, gravity's already starting.
True.
Like, I mean, also, are you able to lose weight once you're, are you like frozen? Are you like, let's say I got lip fillers. Do they shrink?
I don't think SJM really thought about that.
I have things that I need to consider before I make the drop. This is a small moment, but it's an important moment. And I want to go back to when Bryce and Danica make their wish. And Bryce expresses that she doesn't have much power. But she steps up anyway. Quote, not to be outdone, not even by an alpha wolf. I write this because I have been harping on her being passive. I know that. And that she's going along and following whatever Danica says. But that's not who Bryce will become by the end of this book. SJM needs to set us up to understand that Bryce has that power within her, that stubbornness, that need to be like, you know what? I don't care if you're an alpha wolf. I'm going to do things too.
I'm going to make a comparison that you're not going to like.
No.
And our listeners might not like.
Okay.
Bryce's relationship with Danica is very much like Feyre's relationship with Tamlin, of putting aside a core part of her because this is the most important thing right now, or this, like, the person in front of her gave her a means of survival or like really fulfilled a need.
You're almost stunted because you're getting too much.
Yeah, from because a person. You're too grateful.
Yeah.
That you compromise yourself because it's more important to be grateful.
Yeah. But also, how much is Bryce able to grow with Danica just being that provider, that protector, mm-hmm. that alpha? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Bryce clearly has it within her, just like Farrah did with Tamlin, right? To take care of herself. But here's a person who's finally able to be, like you're saying, that protector, that it doesn't give Bryce room to grow. It's like how I'm practicing my Spanish and I can't do it with my family because mm-hmm. they take over.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand.
So, yeah. Yeah. Good call out.
Thanks.
I mean, like you said, listeners might not be happy, but unless.
Sorry.
They're going to be like, you're really harsh on Danica, and be like, yeah, we were.
Sorry. Yeah.
It may not get any better.
I do love Danica. I cry when Danica gets killed.
Oh, absolutely. No, and that's like, and just because I'm saying that there's toxic elements doesn't mean that I think they have a bad dynamic or bad friendship. I really would have hoped that there would be times that, like, eventually they would have to move out and would have to grow apart.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
I agree.
They just, at 23, of course you're not going to do that yet.
Right.
You know? So.
At the opening of chapter 3, I think Bryce is in a bad mood. And sometimes I wonder if she likes Danica. Like you said, she can be really, really harsh. For example, when Bryce gets home, the pack of devils are already in her apartment, Danica included. Bryce braces, quote, for the onslaught of lupine bossiness, arrogance, and general nosiness in all manners of her life. And that was just Danica.
You can hear the snap.
I don't know if that...
People don't do that anymore. It's just one now. There you go.
It's not very loud.
Now we're cool. I wonder how much of their relationship is just a reminder constantly to Bryce that she isn't good enough. Like, it's like that toxic thing of like, well, you know, once again, I'm with the pack of wolves and I'm just half fae and who knows how much power I'm going to actually get. And that by being so close to Danica in her pack, it's a constant reminder that she's always going to be on the outside. And we're going to see in a little bit how much self-hatred she has for her. Like, you know, she has got a lot of confidence, but she really is screwed up inside. And this is all before Danica died.
Yep.
She's screwed up. Yep. And it's a lot of self-hatred. And I think that it's just a kind of a toxic cycle here.
I absolutely agree with you. And I have to say, I think that's normal at 23.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's normal. I mean, it's unhealthy, but it's normal.
Yeah.
To be full of self-loathing and to be insecure about things and to compare yourself to other people. And so in that way, Bryce is very normal for a 23-year-old. However, it just gets more messed up with Danica's death.
Yeah, because she never had the opportunity to be like, okay, maybe these are parts that I need to let go of our friendship and our dynamic. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is the parts that I need to grow. Instead, Danica gets placed on this pedestal.
Yep.
And that fall from grace is going to be a bitch.
Right. Lucky for Danica, she's dead.
Sorry, I was about to say, lucky for Bryce, we're here with her.
When she enters her home, Bryce notices that Connor is sitting in her favorite spot on the couch. At first, I thought it was cute. It's like when you get up from your couch to grab something and your dog takes your seat. Get it? He's a hound. But then I re-examined that thought. Connor probably knows that that seat is Bryce's favorite spot because Connor has been crushing hard on Bryce for 5 years at this point. He also knows Bryce is going to be home from work very soon. If I were him, I would be saving that spot for my preferred lady friend.
Yeah.
Instead, Connor has claimed it, metaphorically marking his territory. It's a power move, and it is a dick one at that.
It is. It is. Connor is, in fact, an alpha hole that she fears. And I don't have any memory off the top of my head, but I wonder if there's a scene where Hunt gives up his seat for Bryce.
Ugh. I'm going to have to be on the lookout now.
I know. Like, I'm wondering, because it is such an alpha hole move where it's like, you know, but he like pee a little bit in the seat too. It's like, mark my territory.
I think the difference is Hunt and Bryce share a space in a way that's comfortable for them.
Mm-hmm. This is encroaching.
Yes.
Danica's, the pack of hellhounds, devils, right? I was like, wait, what? The pack of devils are encroaching on Bryce's space, and that's because Bryce is so desperate to be a part of them.
Yeah.
And it's not healthy for her at all. She does need her space.
Yeah.
Everyone needs their space, because at the end of the day, she's not a wolf. She's not a werewolf. That's how werewolves live. She is fey. So start acting like one. That being said, oh, sorry, go ahead.
They are wolf shifters, not werewolves.
I am sorry. Thank you. But, you know, if you weren't the one to say it,
somebody else would.
Somebody else would. And I would much rather you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So all that being said, though, I will give credit where credit is due. The fact that Connor is the beta and he is totally okay with Danica being in charge. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Honestly, though, what's interesting about wolves and hounds and animals in general is that if the alpha dies, someone becomes an alpha, and that would have been Connor.
Yeah. So he's just plotting her death?
It's not what I was saying.
There's something about SJM men that she just loves introducing them confined.
Yes. Because...
trapped in something.
Yeah. 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 Because...
even Tamlin.
It's true. Is it because the woman helps unleash them?
Rar.
Okay, I did not need that.
I'm all, in my mind, I'm playing Rihanna's S&M.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Moving on. The theme of destiny or predestination comes up when we learn that all predator-born shifters, like Danica and the Pack of Devils, have, quote, no choice but to join the auxiliary, where they're required to patrol and keep the city safe, which is no walk in the park. It includes killing and torturing and maiming, apparently. Let's talk about the difference between destiny and predestination. Destiny is a force that influences the path of your life, like fate, where the outcome will always be the same. The idea that events in your life follow a set plan, and that plan has a purpose. Predestination is when a higher power has determined what your destiny will be. And we're talking about Danica and the Pack of Devils being predestined for the auxiliary. For many people, these two concepts are the same. But in the context of this novel, I would argue that they are different. For the Pack of Devils and other shifters to be, quote, predestined to a lifetime of service sounds like meddling by a higher power to me.
Mystery.
And because they've labeled it destiny or fate, these individuals do not exercise their free will to decide whether they want to do that or, you know, try to do something different, regardless of whether or not they're predestined. I think we're going to see times where what has been predestined, whether that be by that Asteri, by a higher power, perhaps the mother, or perhaps just SJM, tempts characters that we follow in Crescent City to do what's easy for their lives. And other times when they're going to make choices contrary to that destiny. And I think it's just going to be an interesting struggle that we're going to watch. And I think Juniper is a great example of this. She's a fawn. She's not supposed to dance. Mm. She's not as graceful or talented as the Fae, but she works her ass off to be what she wants to be, regardless of whatever box she's been put in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that we're going to get more with the, you know, when I think when you hear like destiny and predestiny, I think a lot about free will, you know, and the exercise of free will. And I think that we're going to see so much of that. And also like the, you know, it to me, it starts to add a lot more like religious stuff. Mm-hmm. And especially when you have like, you know, the Lucifer, Danica, Morningstar of it all. And then the literal archangels in here and the fact that Hunt is trapped and is a slave to them, and because of choices of a rebellion, you know, just like Lucifer did, like, you know, there's just so many things of like choices all within destiny and predestiny. Because what happens if you start making choices that are different than what's been predestined to you, which is a huge part of like you're saying in this book?
Yeah, it goes back to what you said earlier, like, was SJM working through her own religious crisis, spiritual crisis? Because
I'm kind of like,
there is a lot of, if we analyze this from the lens of religion strictly, mm-hmm. and the process of questioning your own religion or your own spirituality or what you've been taught by organized religion, it feels very similar. And ironically, Bryce and this book are timed with my leaving my own religion.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason beyond Bryce being a super cool sexual being. It's about questioning what authority has told you.
I think, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because SJM is half Jewish. Is she half Mormon? Or did I make that up?
I think you made that up.
I made that
I thought
up.
She was just Jewish.
Okay, she's Jewish. But yeah, no, there is a lot to be said about someone who is going through their own understanding of belief and religion. And especially when you start looking at all of these things, like the fact that Lucifer means morning star, mm-hmm. and that is a Latin thing. And you go into like Greek mythology, and then Christians, like the term, like Lucifer, that word wasn't brought in until the King James Bible. It, like, you know, like there's so many things that get crossed over, and, you know, like different legend and lore and mythology, it all gets like kind of like meshed up and stuff when you just think about like modern religion.
Yeah.
And I kind of think this book is doing a great example of what happens when you do mesh it all up.
I mean, think about Christianity. It's based on a lot of pagan stuff.
Oh my God. Christmas is a pagan holiday.
Yeah. And that's not the only one. And we're seeing a lot of like the old gods,
yeah.
and the Asteria. Like all these things are intermingling and getting jumbled up.
Mm-hmm.
Like no wonder why we can't keep it all together. We can't keep our own religions all together.
Right? Like, I'm having my own crisis reading your crisis. Stop crisis managing me. We start to see Bryce's sexuality more in this chapter, something that I would say is a staple for Bryce. Her sexuality is used as an expression, as coping, and as a weapon. In many ways, people could say that this is the oldest form women have as a weapon. It's the oldest weapon for women. You know what I mean? You guys get it. We see this when she walks past Connor and she swishes her hips. And Bryce's sexuality is so linked to who she is that we'll see her moods, motivations, and mindset based off of her body and how she wields it.
Mm-hmm. 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 I love this thought because, A, it's, to me, it's just empowering. But B, I also think it's tied to how Bryce uses perceptions of her body and of who she is as an individual as a weapon. What people assume about Bryce because of the way she looks will be used against them. And she's really, really deft at wielding that weapon against them. And I really wish I could be her.
We will. By the end of this season,
we will be Bryce.
We'll have both dyed our hair red.
No, I haven't dyed my hair in 7 years.
Yeah. And I just got, not just, but I've exited my red era.
Yes.
And I'm in my blonde era right now. Give it a couple years.
When Bryce checks in with Danica, she can tell Danica's lying about why she's anxious with Briggs being released. Bryce tries to call Danica out about that. And Danica does not budge. So what does Bryce do? Bryce makes a logical assumption that, oh, it must be because of Sabine, in order to rationalize Danica's behavior. And Danica neither confirms nor denies. She just conveniently uses Bryce's rationalization to her advantage.
Yeah.
And this happens a lot in this book, not just in the context of Danica, but people make assumptions. And it's just very convenient for everybody else around them. And it's very annoying. That's all I'm going to say.
In this moment of avoidance, we see Danica take a drink of her beer. And in a few pages, we're going to see Bryce getting ready for her date by taking a few shots. Again, these are party girls. These are, you know, they're using alcohol to cope.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but you are absolutely right.
Yeah. It just shows how much I'm in my 30s. Like the idea of shots to relax. Ugh. And the thing is, I that was me, just being like, knock a few back. Like two shots was nothing, you'd be fine. My tummy hurts thinking about it.
Yeah, me too. My head hurts.
I know. And yet, also, now I want the drunk munchies.
I'm just hungry.
Yeah.
We learned that one of the reasons Danica is upset is because during the meeting with the city heads, Sabine tells Danica in front of everybody else that two CCU students were killed during the raid on Luna's temple during that blackout, aka when Danica was stealing the horn. So Danica's feeling really guilty about that. We don't know it, but for those of us who've read, we do know it. Just wanted to point out that power move because Sabine does it on purpose.
Yeah.
Not only to shame Danica, but to like, how do I put it? Because we know, having read the book, we know Sabine knows Danica stole the horn. Nobody else knows. Sabine is in front of everyone shaming Danica because two CCU students died. It's almost like she's warning Danica.
I think it is like a warning. Like, hey, there was something going on that night. You had no, because it's also, it took her a week to tell her.
Yeah.
That's also strange. I agree. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think we know enough that, like, Sabine does have Danica's best interest.
Yeah.
At heart.
Even if she doesn't display it in a way that we find acceptable.
Yeah.
Speaking of power moves, if you've been with the podcast a while, you know I'm obsessed with food as a form of power, which I shorten to food is power. Danica, in her turmoil and anxiety about the Briggs release, and probably all the stuff related to Luna's horn and the death of the CCU students, like, there's a lot going on in her head right now. She chooses to withhold food from her pack.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's in the kitchen with all the pizza, eating like two pizzas by herself, and no one else is allowed to eat right now.
That is such a choice.
Yeah, there's no reason other than the fact that she's the alpha and she can. Like, what other reason is there?
But it also shows that that's a daily occurrence.
Yeah.
It's not like a traditional, you know, on Kalamai, you know, like, situation. It's like, this is just, as we've established, a Thursday. And it really is messed up, though, just how much Danica is, it's just a power play.
Yeah.
And it's a choice of a power play.
It's a choice. And everybody has to accept it because they are the betas.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't like a public function.
So we've talked a lot about Bryce loving herself and being confident with her body. But she still has insecurities, as I've mentioned. And that insecurity or that self-hatred sometimes comes up in ways that look like her comparing herself to Danica. Mm-hmm. Because Danica is the person she's with all the time. It's easy to compare yourself to the people you're around all the time. For example, when Bryce first enters the kitchen to find Danica, Bryce observed how Danica looked off, including how Danica's, quote, braid drooped over her slim shoulder. In two pages from that point, Bryce observes Danica's, quote, lean body seemed taut. And in another two pages, Danica crosses her, quote, slender arms. Like, we know Bryce is a curvy girl, but this is the first time we're learning that Danica is thin, like super thin. Now, this might be me overanalyzing it, but I don't think so, because Danica's powerful.
Yeah.
Why is she not toned and muscular?
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead, Bryce is hyper-fixated on the thin frame. On top of that, Bryce will ruminate later in the scene on the fact that she's been told over and over that she's had the wrong body type. I think that Bryce and Danica's size difference, whatever that might look like, is sometimes a sore spot for Bryce,
mm-hmm.
especially when Danica's eating multiple pizzas on her own. Like, I'd be pissed too.
Absolutely. I mean, it's at one point, Bryce does describe the wolves as being, you know, when compared to humans, they're taller, they're more muscular.
Mm-hmm.
And she describes Connor as muscled.
Right.
We get none of that with Danica.
Nope.
We get scrawny ass.
Right. Exactly. Which wasn't as clear last chapter, but is like really prevalent right now. So why is Bryce so perturbed? At the end of the day, I think it's because she doesn't have a fae body. She loves music like a fae, feels music like a fae, but she can't dance like a fae. And I think that really bothers her and just reminds her of the fact that she isn't one of them.
Because her body is human.
Right, exactly. And with the pack there, she probably feels like an outsider. They took her spot. Danica's one of them. Bryce is not.
Yeah. And I'll get more into her, into Bryce's body, but I want to like say this before I forget. I bet that it's purposeful that she is a curvy girl because it does represent human. And there is something to be said about, like, you know, all these books where our heroines are so thin and, you know, strong and flat stomachs. It's just not realistic. It's not human in many ways to, like, this is not the average.
Yeah.
And now it's like, she's Faye, but with a very human body. A body that she loves.
Yeah.
Even if she resents sometimes, because it's not because of the size, but because of the humanity.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It's the human piece that sometimes bothers her. It's not the size or the shape of it.
Yeah, because she's healthy. She's strong.
Right. Ah, the complex relationship women have with our bodies.
We were worried we wouldn't have anything to say.
We thought this was going to be 45 minutes.
Genuinely.
So Bryce's consternation with Faye that extends to her body also extends to her dislike of mating. Bryce likes the idea of being with a human who is bad at sex by the name of Reed Redner because, quote, at least he's not some psychotic alpha hole who will demand a 3-day sex marathon and then call me his mate, lock me in his house, and never let me out again. Honestly, I don't think she would be that mad about the sex.
I felt attacked in this section.
I'm sorry.
At least I know what I want, and it's not that.
That's true. It's hilarious to me that I feel like SJM is calling out all her previous male protagonists or love interests.
Yeah.
They're like, Reese is an alpha hole who had sex marathons with Faye Ryan and kept her locked up in a house. Like, SJM's kind of like tongue-in-cheek calling herself out.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, slow down, honey. You're going to ask for it later. Which, like, we all will. You know, I will say, though, I think Reese can handle it. I think most women could. I believe in us.
Yeah,
I believe in us.
I do, too. So although Bryce would probably be just fine with the sex marathon, it's the other stuff that she's really, it's not the sex that she's upset about. It's all the other stuff, the locking away, the, you know, controlling. And it's all stuff she associates with her Faye father, who at this moment we're not supposed to know who it is, who rejected her and her mother. And honestly, it seems like a valid reason to hate the Faye side of herself.
Which is funny because that she doesn't want an alcohol, because like we were saying earlier, it's Danica.
Yeah.
You know, like all these things that she doesn't want, being locked away, being controlled, someone controlling and everything. Like Danica literally got Bryce to get a tattoo.
Yeah.
Like controlling for her own good, but still. And Bryce is surrounding herself with the things that she hates the most or makes her feel the most insecure. And in many ways, Danica is everything of that to Bryce.
That is a great point.
Thank y'all.
She's almost self-sabotaging. Like, she's punishing herself.
Yeah.
But she's also not, because they are good friends. Because
they are good friends. But that's kind of like, I'm going to call it the 23 conundrum, where there is a thing about your 20s that happens where you're like, we are good friends. There are toxic parts. Doesn't mean that's not salvageable. I genuinely believe that if Danica were to have survived, they would have figured it out.
Yeah.
But that really would have required some distance between the two, like living apart or something. But right now, the cycle isn't healthy for Bryce, whether Danica knows what she's doing or not.
Yeah, I agree. Going back to our food is power conversation, Bryce has just been reminded that, oh, yeah, you have a date with Reed. And Bryce complains that they're going to one of those, quote, frilly spots where they give you salmon mousse on a cracker and call it a meal. We all know that's not nearly enough sustenance. Give me at least 30 of those and then we can have a conversation. That's not my point. My point is that these types of places are real, where people pay mads amount of money for hardly any food. And why is that? Is it because they have the excess money to burn and the willpower to control their appetite in public? To me, it's always been about power, these types of places. And to other people, that might also be true. With Reed, it certainly feels like him using his status, despite being human, to impress Bryce, or at least those who are observing him with Bryce, feels like a power move. And I'm going to have so much to discuss next episode about power.
Yeah.
But I have to hold back.
I know. Well, they're going to come back for more, please.
Yes, please come back. Now, I mentioned before Bryce has a love of dance and ballet. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. I just want to point out that it's important for us to have known at this moment that Bryce has been going to lunchtime classes. She does leave her gym bag at work. She has posters of the Crescent City Ballet in this apartment. Yes, it's a lot of information, but the point is when it goes missing, we know how bad things are. Mm-hmm. When Bryce stops dancing, shit is bad.
Yeah.
And SJM has to have established that in these first three chapters for us to know why that has meaning later on.
It's genius.
It's so genius.
We don't even realize it's being shoved down our throat.
She's just so good.
It's where can we throw something at her? In a loving way. In a loving way.
In just a lot of pride and passion.
Yeah, I throw things at Amy when I'm happy for her. I want to move into the discussion of Bryce's body. And it's not a subject that I like to talk about in real world because, like, let women be women, you know, but this isn't real world. So for the context of the story and the text, like, we're going to get into it. I think it's really important into who she is. I said earlier that Bryce's sexuality is a huge part of Bryce as a character. Again, she is in many ways the ultimate feminine. Now we get into her body. Bryce, and this is canon, is a curvy girl. We can guess that she's either mid-size or plus size, and the reason why it's so important is because it gets mentioned throughout the book so often, so therefore we have to keep mentioning it. As a mid-size girly myself, I love, love, love this. I love that we're seeing more of representation in books, and there is so much confidence in Bryce's actions and movements that she celebrates it, even admiring the quote slope of her ass and challenges Danica's quote bony ass later on. We know Bryce is fit. She dances, she works out. Her curves have nothing to do with her health. Again, we talked about it. This is the humanity of her. It's everything to do with the epitome of the feminine. And, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about this in the ACOTAR seasons, and I think it's relevant here. If her curvy body is the feminine mm-hmm. and her curvy body represents humanity, mm-hmm. once again, humanity represents the feminine, mm-hmm. the quote unquote weaker species. And I think that with Briggs's uprising, it's the feminist uprising in many ways. It's or just in like, you know, female uprising.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. I'm going to keep going. So this is everything, right? Like her being curvy and owning it and everyone checking her out. It's everything in our society. We've been taught the opposite of it. And even SJM in this world has showed us the opposite because we keep getting told that Bryce has the wrong body type for dancing. And so clearly there is some body shaming happening. And I think SJM is making a very purposeful choice because, again, like her other characters, Farah, Aelin, these are characters who are very... Like, Farah's literally skin and bones when we meet her. Mm-hmm. And, like, when she plumpens up, she's still very thin. Aelin is an assassin. Like, she's very fit. So we, you know, we keep getting more of these, like, very thin heroines that I think SJM kind of made a choice here.
Yeah.
Of saying, like, no, I'm not going to continue this. Bryce owns her looks and her body. And let's talk about how long it takes for Bryce to get ready. She spends every day before work, quote, spent a goddamn hour on her hair and her makeup every morning, not counting the 30-minute shower to get herself gleaming, shaved, and moisturized. Maybe that's what I need to start doing to be Bryce, is start taking longer to get ready.
That's the lesson you took away.
Yes. Is there another one? And yet, for this date, she only takes 20 minutes to get ready. I really, really relate to that. All this to say is, at this point, we are seeing Bryce own her own body, owns her sexuality, and it's not for anyone else. When mm-hmm. she gets ready in the morning, she gets ready for herself. When she gets ready for a man, it's 20 minutes. You could say that I don't dress for women. I don't dress for men. But lately, I've been dressing for revenge, in the words of Taylor.
Had to get that Swift quote.
Absolutely.
I do want to go back to something you mentioned briefly about Bryce calling out Danica's bony ass. From my perspective, and this is a power thing, Bryce is projecting her insecurity on to Danica when she says that right before she leaves for her date. Bryce says, quote, "I'm sorry if I make you feel self-conscious about your bony ass, Danica." And to me, it came across in that moment as Bryce saying, quote, "You make me feel self-conscious about my body," because she's been calling out Danica's slim shoulders and slender arms and lean body.
Yeah, because Danica said was like, they may not let you go in.
Right.
Like, she was just saying, like, you're wearing, your ass is almost hanging out. Like, yeah, she's wearing a short dress, which Bryce knows. And then it's like, I'm going to attack your body.
Yeah. And I think this just goes back to what you were saying, is that ultimately, Bryce is showing her humanity. She is demonstrating her fear of Vanir because of her human weakness. And that's exemplified in the differences between her body and the wolves, who are too tall, too muscled, and too thin, or too still. Bryce is also demonstrating her insecurity, which to me is just her giving away her power.
Yeah.
Whether or not she's really insecure about her body, it's that comparison point, whether or not she really genuinely feels insecure. And she gives power to that insecurity and that comparison, which just aggravates everything that she's going through right now. However, good old Bryce uses humor as both a weapon and a shield. And I think that's going to be my Crescent City theme. We see this a lot from Bryce. We're going to see a lot from Hunt. And if you pay attention, you'll see it in Jack too.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I do. You do use humor as both weapon and shield.
If you say something funny and with a smile, it doesn't matter how mean of what you said.
It wasn't. It's
No. I'm talking about me. No, it is who I am. Yeah, no, I'm proud of. No, I'm proud of this fact. I'm just teaching our listeners. If you're going to say something not nice, say it in a funny way and with a smile.
So what am I talking about? When Connor walks into the kitchen before Bryce takes off for her date, Bryce interrupts him and says, quote, "Is this a rehearsed speech?" Which not only calls him out, but throws him off. And it's really just a clever move on Bryce's part. By utilizing her humor, Bryce gains control of the situation instead of allowing whatever Connor had rehearsed to play out. And Bryce is successful. What's most important to me right now is that SJM can be extremely fucking funny in her writing. So when the jokes don't land, it's not SJM, it's the character telling the joke.
I might be like, it's the reader. No, it's true, because Feyre herself isn't that funny.
Oh, she's terrible.
Yeah. Bryce is hilarious.
Yep.
Aelin's hilarious.
Yep.
I keep talking about Bryce being the ultimate feminine. And this is why she's so complex and why women in general are just amazing and complex. Bryce reflects on why she's not right for Connor. And she wants to tell him to go find a woman who wants the litter of pups and that whole family thing. And that she's, quote, 10 kinds of fucked up. Still likes to party until she's no better than a puking in an alley CCU student. And wasn't entirely sure if she could love someone. Not when Danica was all she really needed anyway. Bryce rejects the feminine and what the ultimate feminine thing is, aka, like, I know this is bullshit as I'm saying this, but, you know, having children, and some people view bearing children as the one job that women have, and that's the one thing we're supposed to do. And Bryce has not just dismissed it, but she also has enough self-awareness to know, like, I'm not capable of that. Like, that's not for me. And also, it just keeps, like, reminding, like, you know, when she says that, and the sentiment of, like, you know, Danica's everything I need anyway. If Hunt had walked into her life, no way would she have enough room for Hunt.
No, not at all.
Like, Danica needed to die for her to find love.
Absolutely.
Moral of the story, if you don't want your friends to die to find love, figure your shit out. Stop being codependent.
I genuinely thought you were going to say, your friends need to die.
No, Amy, I've chosen therapy.
Thank
you. We're not killing you off. Codependency is for your 20s.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I did that whole friendship codependent thing. It sucked. It wasn't healthy. And then it's like, then 30 happened. And everyone is too tired to be codependent.
It's true.
It's great.
Yeah, it's really true.
Right?
We now come upon the last time Bryce and Danica will ever see each other while both are living. And also the first time they say, light it up. This phrase is going to be used in a variety of ways throughout the series, but what's most important to me is the use of it as a term of power in various instances. While right now the term comes across as a farewell said in fondness, I personally feel like it's a callback to the moment Bryce saved Danica's life. And it's equivalent to give him hell, set the place on fire. And I love that these two remind each other regularly of their power. Like, you go cause shit. Have a good day.
I want that to be our thing. cause shit. Hey, go cause some shit today, Amy.
You too.
Thank you.
Danica doesn't only say light it up to Bryce, though. She also says love you as Bryce leaves. Mm-hmm. And we know, because SJM makes it clear, that Danica doesn't say this lightly. Significant?
She makes it so clear. I mean, yeah, this reads like Danica knows. That almost made me mad. Be like, does Danica know she's going to die that night?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like we said earlier.
Yeah.
She doesn't actually know, but she's just taking every opportunity to communicate. Because she doesn't know when she might die.
Yep.
But it still makes me mad. Because I do question, like, she obviously knows she's going to die at this point.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get into, like, next. When we talk, when the death scene happens, we'll go more into theories.
Yeah.
Our own speculation.
Yeah. Before we wrap up and move on to breadcrumbs, we thought it would be good to discuss this last quote from Bryce's perspective. Quote, honestly, it made no sense that any of them were friends. The future alpha of the wolves, an assassin for high-paying clients waging war across the sea, a stunningly talented dancer, and the only fawn ever to grace the stage of the Crescent City Ballet. And her, Bryce Quinlan, assistant to a sorceress, would-be wrong body type dancer.
You know, what I really enjoy so much about Bryce, and I relate to so much, is how confident you can be in some parts and how insecure you can be in others. And I think people struggle with that because, at least for me personally, I walk around and be like, I'm so cute and pretty. And then there's other times where I'm like, I absolutely hate the way that I look. I can't stand my jawline and all this stuff. And without even trying, we are 3 chapters in and I get that entirely with Bryce. She is confident. She loves the slope of her ass. But she also has nothing to her name. She's half human and she's the wrong body type.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think more so than ever, SJM has written a female protagonist who is completely relatable.
Yeah.
She's human, literally. Mm-hmm. She isn't viewed as perfect. She's the exact opposite of what her society and our society, quite frankly, expect from a woman.
Yep.
And she is confident and not confident. And that is like...
That's womanhood.
That is womanhood. That's what it means to be a woman. We're all, I don't know if victims is the right word, but we're all victims of our own psyche sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way. I'm extremely confident when it comes to work. But in other aspects of my life, I'm like... the most insecure person. And that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. But that's why I think as we go into our Bryce-isms, you know, like she doesn't have it perfect, but damn it, when she can fake it till she makes it.
Yeah.
She's great at that too.
She is good at that. And that's not always a bad thing.
No, my therapist actively encourages that. So let's get into breadcrumbs, non-multiverse.
Yes.
So this is safe. If you have not read any of SJM's other works, this is a safe space for you. But you will have had to have read Crescent City 1 and 2.
Yes, that's correct.
Chapter 1. When Danica asks what the fuck rootling means, Bryce admonishes, quote, you'd know if you ever picked up a book, Danica. SJM really, really wants to lay things on thick in this book, even from the first page of this chapter. Just you wait, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. And essentially, though, Danica does a lot of reading. She's literally rootling books, especially in the library beneath the antique store.
It's just so ironic.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if you'd read, well, she reads a lot.
She does read a lot, and she reads a lot in secret.
Yeah.
In chapter 2, Bryce tells Danica, quote, Jessica's been hounding me about finding Luna's horn again. Maybe check your sore back.
Also in chapter 2, quote, the theft of the sacred horn during the power outage had been the biggest news story out of the disaster. the Archangel Micah himself had offered a hefty reward for any information regarding its return. So much groundwork is being laid here for the plot, especially for the true identity of the book's antagonist. Like, again, this book was written for the rereads.
Yep, sure was. Bryce says to Danica, quote, "You really mean to tell me that any of the heads want a rebel like Briggs at large? They'll find some technicality and throw his ass right back in jail." They sure will. And that technicality will be Danica's death.
Also in chapter 2, Danica to Bryce, quote, "I can handle Briggs myself." Like all the times before when Danica let him go with just a warning, which Bryce conveniently doesn't know yet. Like, it's real easy to not be threatened when you've done nothing to this guy.
Yep. In the breadcrumbs, I have also from chapter 2, Bryce's middle name is Adelaide, which means noble kind. Which is just a big fucking clue that Bryce is a princess.
The gates take a drop of magic, quote, "from the veins of the person who touched the pad, a tinkling zap of power gone forever. But each bore the same plaque, quote, the power shall always belong to those who give their lives to the city." But not really gone, just in a well waiting for someone to take it, aka Bryce.
How convenient.
So convenient. Or just well written.
Just well written. Still in chapter 2, while Bryce tells Danica she barely has any power, quote, "Danica was expected to claim a sea of power that would put her ranking far past Sabine's, likely equal to that of Fae royalty, maybe even beyond the Autumn King himself." So this is kind of a theory on my end, but in helping Bryce make the drop at the end of the book, and by burning up her own soul to help Bryce, does Danica give Bryce her depth of power?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that gets dropped just right here in front of us.
Yep.
By the way.
Last in chapter 2, Sabine was a piece of shit and never whispered or hinted who Danica's father might be. Another lie from Danica, though we won't discover the truth until Sky and Breath.
In chapter 3, quote, "sometimes Bryce felt bad for Danica's future mate, whoever that would be." So I'm sorry to say, Danica's actually already found her mate, and she hasn't told Bryce. And again, that's for Sky and Breath.
In chapter 3, quote, "Danica knew Reed casually through the part-time security work that she did for his father's business. Danica claimed that the work was too boring to bother explaining." I'm almost offended at how much Danica withholds from Bryce. Like, it's just, she just coddles her.
Yeah.
She had just given her a little bit. A little bit.
Instead, she's like, "No, it's so boring.
It's so boring. You wouldn't understand. Go sleep with the boring man."
In chapter 3, quote, "even Micah Domitus was a major investor in its, Redner Industries, cutting-edge experiments, a.k.a. experiments with synth, for the purpose of healing Luna's horn so it can be used again." Like, we're getting so much information that we're not aware of.
Bryce about Danica, quote, "that must explain why I have a date and she hasn't been on one in, what is it now, 3 years? It's been 2 years, assholes. Because Danica found her mate 2 years ago. Setting things up that we don't know about until Sky and Breath." God, SJM, so good.
She's so good. Still in chapter 3. Because obviously we didn't go to chapter 4. Quote, "Bryce explained that she'd spent most of her life saying it, that being I love you, just in case it was the last time. In case she wouldn't get to say goodbye to the people who mattered most." Not only is this relevant to the fact that Danica's last words to Bryce were, "I love you," but also at the end of the book, Bryce calls Hunt's phone, believing she'll get his voicemail, and wants to tell everyone that who she loves goodbye. It's so sad.
Quote, "Fury kept her professional shit out of their lives, and they knew better than to ask too many questions. Only Juniper can get away with it. Because they're dating or they're like into each other, but you know, something's going on."
Yeah. Last breadcrumb that is non-multiverse related. Quote, "Danica knew Bryce well enough not to even suggest that she alone pay for one of the high-rise glossy apartments by the river's edge or in the CBD. Oh, but joke's on you. Danica does that anyway. And Bryce gets to inherit that. So good for her.
Woo. Okay, so now we're going to do multiverse breadcrumbs, and Amy's going to read them all to me. We're going to power read, and I'm going to power react.
Okay, power read. Mm-hmm. Chapter 1. Quote, Danica wiped at her brow with a filthy hand, smearing the black liquid splattered there. Maybe a Vogue reference right off the bat.
God.
Chapter 2. Quote, on summer solstice, when the sun lined up perfectly with a gate, it filled the entire square with rainbows. So many that it was like walking inside a diamond. Reminds me of summer solstice in Akawar.
Oh, I was almost like maybe the rainbow of Valaris.
Oh, I wasn't thinking that. Oh, I was thinking the summer solstice ritual. The sun lines up at the gate, just like the sun lined up with Ianthe and the...
Yep.
Anyway.
I'm on board.
Remind me of Wings of Ruin. Danica's badge has a golden emblem of a crescent moon with a bow and an arrow knocked through it, which just gives me Feyre vibes.
Yeah.
Like bows, moons for midnight. Also, Artemis.
Yep. Yeah.
But mostly Feyre. Quote, the court's gates were memorials, though she didn't know for which conflict or war. Considering it was a statement that could be construed as being in opposition to the Asteri's rule, Bryce was always surprised that they had allowed the gates to continue to stand. So this is my theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Asteri don't mess with the gates because they need the gates to travel between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And they want the ones in the city as a backup to the ones they have in their palace.
Yeah.
Also, just so we're clear, these gates were probably created during the war we will learn about in Sky and Breath.
Nice.
Last quote, and then some general thoughts. Quote, the Vanir were essentially immortal. Some species bore children who didn't enter maturity until they were in their 80s. Just like Akatar.
The Fae. Yep. And Akatar.
What a clue. So in general, it's ironic to me that Illyrians and Winged Fae and Akatar are lesser Fae.
Mm-hmm.
But in Crescent City, they are angels and they are the superior race.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted, I think it's like a nod at evolution.
Yeah.
And how the same thing can evolve on different continents.
Okay, hear me out.
Yeah.
Pangaea.
Yes.
What is Pangaea?
Pangaea, you mean?
That's the one.
It is when all the continents were one continent, when the world was formed.
So there's been discussion on what's the most developed.
Mm-hmm.
In the multiverse, like,
yeah.
The question is of timelines in a way, like, is one past, present, future, and maybe the whole, like, they have cell phones is a red herring, and they're actually, like, where everything was formed.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we know that Fae were not originally part of this world. This was the human world.
Well, maybe other things were first formed there. I don't know.
Sorry.
I had something.
You had something. I ruined it. I'm sorry.
It wasn't right.
Also, I want to point out, let's not forget that there is Sunball in Valaris. Amarin has a favorite Sunball team, and that happens to be the sport that Ethan Holstrom plays in Crescent City.
Mm-hmm.
This was the point when I first started reading Earth and Blood that I started thinking SJM was lacking imagination and was reusing things.
It's so funny how, like, I was like, this feels really similar.
Yeah, like,
you really called it in on this one.
Right? In book two, when Cormac, like, teleports, I was like, this feels a lot like winnowing, but not winnowing. And especially the way he describes it is exactly the same as what Rhys describes it. And then I realized.
We're like, damn it, you're actually genius, not lazy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to get this into a new section. Bryce-isms. Bryce is Amy's and my hero with her badass and her confidence. When Amy decided to channel Bryce, Amy, you started doing all sorts of amazing things started happening, right?
Yeah, my world completely changed in the best way possible.
And you were actively like, I'm going to be Bryce.
Yep.
I remember we were at Sushi House and you're like, I'm going to be Bryce.
Yep.
And then it all changed from there. So my personal goal is to capture one Bryce-ism a week to try to embody that this entire week until next time when we record and we have another thing to embody.
Okay.
You too. You do this too, Amy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm staring at you.
I agree.
Okay. Listener, you too.
Jack is staring at you.
At my microphone. Okay. So this week's Bryce-ism, audacious confidence.
Just like, everybody is checking you out.
Yeah. The scene where the guy, like, where Danica and her make the wish and the guys, like, turn from looking at Danica to Bryce. And she's like, in your dreams. Were they checking her out? I don't know. But in her mind, they were.
Yeah. And that's all that matters.
Go around being like, everyone's checking you out.
In an appreciative way.
Yeah. Not like, you know, scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, everyone's like, did they look twice at me? Yeah, they did. They're interested. Just, like, live with that audaciousness.
Oh, right.
If men could have the audacity, so can we.
Yeah, honestly, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to our question at the top of the episode, Jack, does the world building overtake the character and plot development at the start of House of Earth and Blood?
If you asked me before the analysis, I'd say yes. Because I think everyone, like, the joke of this book on TikTok is, like, you know, she's throwing out these gods, she's throwing out these cities and words, and she doesn't do any explanation except she does. And it's so aggressive. But with the analysis, she also masterfully has character development and establishing the plot without us even knowing.
Yeah, I think we get so hung up on, like, I don't know what these terms are. I don't know how to pronounce these names. What the hell is any of this? That we lose sight of how efficiently she establishes characters.
Mm-hmm.
And how efficiently she establishes those relationships so that we are committed to the same relationships that these characters are in. And that's a big deal because a lot of them die and we get sad about that. So
you also shouldn't read a book and be like, I'm learning a lot about these characters. I would rather take a beat and be like, all right, you're going really hard on this world building versus, okay, you're really going hard on this character development.
Yes.
Because if I were to be like, Bryce was always really insecure about these things. It pisses me off. I get annoyed. Yep. Like, yep. Show, not tell. Yep. If you're going to choose one to sacrifice, you sacrifice the world building. You just lay it out front like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, this podcast is not about Rebecca Yarros, but she did that in the first book, you know, in Fourth Wing. She did exactly that.
Yeah.
She laid out the world building in the most obvious way possible, but everything else was smooth. And that's the right balance. If you can't get both balanced right, you never compromise the character development or the portrayal of the character.
Because at the end of the day, the story isn't about the world.
Yeah.
It isn't about, like, this larger plot. It's going to be about the characters and Bryce's development and story as she copes through her best friend's death and then understanding all the lies that's happened.
Yeah. And I think, as we discussed in this episode, SJM wrote this with the knowledge that you were going to reread it. And so the way that these first three chapters are laid out are so that you have something really juicy to devour when you come back to it. Because she knew by the end of Sky and Breath, we were all going to be like, oh, shit, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. I got to go reread this. Were there clues?
Well, it's funny because there's so many people that I've talked to, and even you said it, where you're like, oh, I liked this so much more on my second read.
Yeah.
I don't think people actively go for the second read.
I agree.
I did not. I only reread it when the second book was about to come out.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I guess I'll reread it. And then I was like, oh my God, was this all there? I totally forgot.
I only reread it for the podcast. Right. Like, that was my second read. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good.
Yeah. So it is, like, I think, you know, hopefully listeners, when they come and listen to this, whether they're huge Crescent City fans, because I was not a huge Crescent City fan, but by just this first episode, you know, you and I were texting and we're like, oh my God, this is going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
We genuinely thought we would have nothing to discuss.
Yeah. We should have given ourselves more credit. We really could talk about anything.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we'll be exploring chapters 4 through 7 of A House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye!